This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. In an alternate universe, we'd all be watching baseball right now. Opening day at Comerica Park passed more or less uncelebrated amid the coronavirus outbreak that's plunged the entire city of Detroit into unspeakable tragedy and loss of life. Major League Baseball postponed the start of its season following the cues of several other pro sports. Bill Shea covers the business of sports for The Athletic. He is based in Detroit. Hey, Bill, welcome back to Stateside.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Have you been able to tell if baseball personnel have been hit very hard by COVID-19?
Well, the major leaguers, you know, the players, the owners, the executives, for the most part, they're going to be fine. Most of them make a lot of money. When you get into the minor leagues, that's where things become a bit more problematic. A lot of your AAA players make pretty healthy wages compared to most Americans. But when you get into the lower minor leagues, that's where you run into guys making like, you know, $600-$800 a month. And when you get outside of the affiliated leagues into the independent leagues where it's, you know, you're 18-year-olds who didn't get drafted and stuff, there's no safety net. You know, and those guys were making $600 a month, and there's no help from organized baseball in that sense. So, you know, those guys have to find jobs or do something. So, yeah, at the lower ends of pro sports and baseball in particular, there's people definitely struggling.
Right. It's pretty spooky around Detroit's downtown sports venues with everybody trying to stay home. What are some of the economic ripple effects of the shutdown of sports for Detroit?
Well, I mean, the immediate effects obviously are there's hundreds and hundreds of people involved in putting on a baseball game, aside from players and coaches and owners and things like that. You know, your ticket takers, your ushers, security guards, janitorial staff, those people, some of them will get some handouts from teams and leagues and things like that. But with the Little Caesars Arena, there was hundreds of full-time people who worked putting on not just Pistons and Red Wings games, but, you know, concerts and things like that. So they're not getting their full wages. Then there's the spillover effects. Bars, restaurants, hotels that relied on games and events downtown, those aren't happening. So that money's not coming in. So not just in Detroit, but elsewhere, we're seeing huge losses of revenue for these ancillary businesses. You know, it's sort of the trickle-down. This is where trickle-down economics actually works, is when there's no games, when there's no events, there's all of these other businesses that are related to them. They're not making money, and those are the people that are ultimately harmed first.
Yeah, Bill, there's this whole cluster of development that people know as the District Detroit. How do you think that the loss of revenue for that project will affect it? It's already under a lot of scrutiny for having a bit of a lackluster ripple effect.
Yeah, I wrote, when I worked for Cranes last year, I wrote a long piece with Kirk Pinho, taking a look at sort of the promises that were made and what had actually been delivered on schedule, and it was significantly less than promised. And those sort of developments, you know, ballpark villages, as they call them, hotels, restaurants, stores, apartments, condos around stadiums, typically take about a decade to fully mature. In this case, because that stuff was already lagging, I don't know that there's a huge immediate effect. I'm sure everything is, you know, all construction is paused. And I imagine if there was any talks with, you know, tenants coming in, businesses that were thinking about signing a lease or building something in the district, probably have paused that for right now or taken a sort of a longer look. But that's one of the cases where just because it was so far beyond what had already been delivered, I don't think that's an immediate harmful effect. But if this pandemic does stretch out over a longer period of time, 6 months, a year, 18 months of this coming and going, yeah, we could see some projects like that in Detroit and elsewhere not realize their full potential.
There was a few reports surfaced over the weekend of Major League Baseball considering playing games at spring training venues down south, you know, for sort of a delayed start of the season. Boy, that sounds like a logistical nightmare. What would have to come into alignment for that to happen?
Oh, man, it would be sort of a Rube Goldberg cartoon of, you know, things that would have to happen, because it's not just baseball making decisions. You've got the players union, umpire union, you know, there's all sorts of things involved in that. And if you're going to play in these, you know, small spring training stadiums, likely without fans in attendance. I mean, you're not making much money. I'm sure they would be broadcast. I mean, just the, on the infrastructure end, all of a sudden you have to, you know, if you're going to broadcast this on NBC or ESPN or whatever, there's a whole infrastructure there that has to be put into place. And you're trying to do this in the middle of social distancing and lockdowns and things like suppliers that supply just the daily consumables for a business. Some of them are not in operation or they're scaled way back because their supply chains are choked off.
Yeah, don't be holding your breath on those Cracker Jacks.
Toilet paper or,
right.
stuff, or, you know, getting a haircut.
Oh, geez. Well, I mean, how long does baseball have before it has to make a decision about whether there will be a season this year?
Now, that's a good question. Baseball has played short seasons in the past. After the 94 labor stoppage, you know, they came back and played a shorter season the following year. You know, hockey has done that. I believe the NBA has done that. I would have to imagine sometime early in the summer, they're going to have to make a decision on when do we cut this off and just say, you know, we'll try again next year. But there's a lot of stakeholders involved. You know, there's the networks who are paying billions of dollars to air games. You know, it's the corporate advertisers. I mean, it's just an incredibly complex matrix of stakeholders in these things. You know, and health and safety have to be the first and foremost, because if you come back too soon and this gets really out of control, then you've opened yourself up to lawsuits.
Right. Bill, I know that you were downtown for the day when casinos in Detroit were finally allowed to start taking sports bets. That was about 2 days before sports officially ended. How do you see what's happening right now changing the financial model for Michigan's casinos?
I think as soon as this is over with, and hopefully that is sooner than later, people are going to want to consume the things that they enjoy, whether that's food and drink or if that's gambling. They will head right back to the casinos and start sticking their quarters in the slot machines or dropping a dime on, you know, the Raiders to beat the Cardinals next week, you know, whatever it might be. People will always return to their appetites and their vices and things like that.
What has it been like trying to write about sports in a world where there really aren't any sports right now, aside from esports online?
I'm very lucky in the sense that I cover the business side of it, and that is a really big story right now. I just wrote a piece on stadium construction, stadium and sports arenas. There's a bunch under construction right now across the country and elsewhere in the world. Some of those are paused. Some of them are wrapping up work so that they can pause. Some of them are still going full force. The two Major League Soccer stadiums in Ohio that are under construction, they're still going on. So I'm lucky in that sense that there is a lot to write about. I mean, there's always a lot to write about for me, but that continues. Your baseball beat writers and hockey and basketball, they've had to get creative. At The Athletic, you know, there's 400 some people on the editorial side, and they have found ways to adapt. There's a lot of Skype calls, a lot of emails, instant messages, texts back and forth. So there's still a lot to write about because this is such a unique situation, and really it's unprecedented in modern times. Twitter and TV didn't exist during the 1918-1919 flu, thank God. So you find ways to overcome and adapt. It's just like any other journalist. If you're, you know, if you're covering the auto industry or politics, this is just a new and different story to write about, and people are very interested. And then there's been a lot of cool, neat stuff. You know, there's the esports that are going on. Some different, unique sports and hobbies are getting some airtime on TV, marbles and drone racing and all this sort of stuff. And people are looking to watch stuff, but they're interested in stuff that, like, our writers are, you know, doing some Q&As. And we just had a story on, hey, you know, what are the organists from, like, the hockey and baseball stadiums doing right now? There's an endless number of stories to be told, even when the games are not being played. But hopefully before long, the games are being played.
You know, we're not asking you to speak for the place you work for, but, you know, The Athletic had really been getting a foothold in the landscape of sports journalism. Does it feel like a setback for what you guys have been trying to build?
I was obviously initially very concerned about this, but the more I thought about it, and, you know, our bosses have been very open and transparent. You know, we operate basically on Slack because there's no newsroom for us. We're all over the country. So it's been very, very positive. And yeah, you know, because there's a lot to write about that, you know, after the initial concern of like, oh my God, all of the sports leagues have stopped. What do we do? Well, you overcome and you adapt and people are still subscribing. You know, it's certainly not the same traffic as, you know, on the Super Bowl or something like that. But because we have such great writers and journalists and such interesting and compelling and provocative content still coming out that people are still saying, oh yeah, I will sign up for that. And they're doing a 90-day free trial, you know, so on the business side, you know, The Athletic and other journalism sites and operations are figuring out the business side of trying to maintain things. But yeah, I mean, we were, you know, we're only 3 years old and it's still on an upward trend and we have about 1 million paid subscribers now. It's still healthy. I mean, obviously it would be a lot healthier if all of the leagues were still playing right now.
It feels like a lot of the pain has been concentrated in local news organizations and their coverage of sports so far.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, because a lot of newspaper companies were in precarious situations. And you see like Gannett responding with, you know, employees have to take an unpaid week off every week for the next 3 months. You know, and when I was at Cranes for 13 years, I wrote a lot about the local media situation. And that's, you know, that's not just a local, it's a national story as well, because they're owned by large corporations elsewhere. So all of the troubles with like the newspaper industry, these enormous conglomerates that took out staggering amounts of debts, and then you get the private equity folks coming in, you know, an industry that was hanging by a thread already, that thread in some places has frayed even more. And I'm not sure that there's been ever a more important time to have top-notch journalism unfolding for the benefit of everyone in the country and the world. So to see layoffs and things like that at news organizations, I mean, it's heartbreaking anyways, but at a time like this, when the public needs to know and the public isn't always getting the most truthful or full answers out of the government, makes it even a bigger crisis.
Bill Shea covers sports business issues for The Athletic. We talked to him over Skype from his home in Detroit. Bill, you stay safe.
Thanks, you too.